and tell you a little bit about the project that we're working on at Oklahoma State. So appreciate the invitation from Robert to come in and tell you about the project. So the genesis of the idea for this project really came about during the drought of 2012. And being an extension, we were getting tons of questions coming into the office about, water issues, lack of availability to water, and things like that. And kind of sitting down, the question came up, how much water are cattle actually drinking, and how much variation surrounds some of those measures. So up to that point, I don't know that we'd really thought about water all that much compared to things like feed intake, but water really is an essential nutrient that's needed in the regulation of a lot of different biological processes, from temperature regulation to growth and reproduction, digestion and metabolism, things of that nature. And literature estimates put cattle direct consumption of water at about 760 billion liters per year. So a lot of water intake in cattle cumulatively. And it is influenced by a variety of different things, including physiological parameters, as you might imagine, like size or weight. Obviously, bigger animals going to increase their requirement for water. Lactation status as well, particularly if you look at dairy cattle that are producing very large volumes of milk. A large portion of that volume is water, so they've got to maintain water intake to drive that milk production. So the other thing water intake is influenced by is environmental parameters. And I don't think that's going to be a surprise to anybody in this audience. But two of those parameters include ambient temperature and solar radiation. And there's quite a bit of great work out there on that subject. This graph here, which is probably going to be really hard to see at the back, I apologize for that. But along the bottom here, each of these boxes is an increase in temperature. And then from the left to the right in each of those boxes is an increase in solar radiation. And what you see is that there's three different breeds on the slide, but in pretty much all of the breeds, as you increase the temperature and the solar radiation, that water intake increases as well. But it's also influenced by other environmental factors, which is reflected here in this graph, which is actually pen intakes kind of extrapolated back to individual animals. But what you can see here on the bottom is an index of temperature and humidity. So things like humidity that contribute to heat stress or regulation of body temperature also contribute to the amount of water cattle are drinking. And as you can see here, as the temperature humidity index increases, the water intake increases as well in those animals. And then here I've just got the, in this particular study, I just listed the summer and winter measures of overall water intake on the average. And as you might expect, it's higher in the summer than the winter. So there's also a relationship between water intake and dry matter intake. And not all studies show really consistently high relationships between these two traits, but if you look in the literature, it's pretty consistent that you do see some relationship between feed intake and water intake. As you might imagine, ration type is one of the things that contributes to that. If you think about an animal eating a largely prairie hay diet versus an animal that might be eating a bunch of really high moisture silage, you can imagine those differences would probably be reflected in the intake as well, just due to the moisture content of the diet. Salt content is another one of those factors. And there's been quite a bit of good work on small numbers of animals where they're restricting either feed intake or water intake. And when you restrict one or the other, it restricts the other trait. So kind of the idea there is that it increases digestibility when we do that, restrict either of those, because it slows the passage rate of that feed. So we've heard a lot about sustainability in the last couple of days. So in thinking about the topic of water consumption in beef cattle, it might be tempting to say, if we think about the amount of water cattle are actually consuming, if we could decrease that, we might decrease total water use in the beef industry. Lest I give you the impression that we could probably do that, I'm going to say that we can't, because the large majority of the water use in the beef industry is going to be things like pre-harvest food, food production. So that isn't really what we're talking about with this particular project. It's more along the lines of management of water resources and water availability for an individual on farm or ranch. So if you think about an issue where we might have drought and we have a dramatic decrease in available water for those animals, that's where we might begin to think about water intake as being something that's important. And if we take a look at the concentration of animals throughout the U.S., you can see that a large portion of them are actually in areas where we don't have large amounts of available precipitation. So if we start to think about how much variation there is in water intake, if you go to the literature, there's a really nice study done by Sexton and others in 2012 that estimated individual animal water intake from 8,000 pen records over 4 years. And they included a variety of different environmental parameters, and the ones they found as important were the temperature of the previous day, the temperature of the current day, the change in temperature, the wind speed, and the temperature and humidity index were all related to the water intake of those animals. But the R-squared for their model was only about 0.32, so there was a significant amount of variation that really wasn't being explained by that model. So we started to think about whether water intake would be a heritable trait. And I looked through the literature. I wasn't able to find any heritability estimates in the literature for the trait, but it has been looked at quite a bit in mice. So there have been some selection studies for adipsia or polydipsia in mice, so that would be extreme thirst or lack of thirst. And if you take a look at water intake in mice, the heritability is actually pretty high. 0.68 and 0.78 were the two estimates that I was able to find. One, just the raw values, and the other one when adjusting for the body weight of those animals. So I'll show you just really quickly some results from one particular study that was done in 2002. They had 28 inbred strains of mice and 323 animals in that study. So they only did a 4-day test for water intake, but they measured that for all those animals. And they found a really, really wide variation in water intake. So in some cases, a twofold difference between the lowest and the highest strains. And there was a lot of variation in those strains in food and water intake that was independent of their body weight. So if you take a look at those results, here's the strains on the left-hand side. So that's not terribly important, but the water intake's on the bottom axis here. And you can see from the lowest to the highest, either sort of the raw values or adjusted for and standardized for body weight, they range here is about a twofold difference in both of those cases, from 6 to 12 or from 4 to 8. So quite a bit of variation in those different mouse lines. And if you take a look at the water intake versus the food intake, each of these dots represents those different strains. This is, again, raw information. This is standardized based on a 30-gram body weight. But you can see there's lots of differences here between these different strains, and a lot of them have very similar food intake and very, very different intakes of water. So if we take a look at what's out there in beef cattle, there are some studies that look at differences in breeds and breed crosses in their water intake. So one study clear back in the 50s showed that Brahman cattle drink less than Hereford cattle at a similar temperature, which in this case was 88 degrees Fahrenheit. And another study from 2011 used a GrowSafe system. So they were able to capture data on quite a few animals, 146. And so they looked at individual animal water intake in that group of animals, and the mean was about 30 liters per head per day. And down here is a breakdown of the different breeds and breed crosses that they had. So they're ranked in terms of intake highest to lowest for gross water intake. And if you standardize that out based on metabolic body weight, they shake out slightly differently, but the order stays about the same. And you can see there are differences, just like in that Itner study. There are differences between the sort of adapted breeds and taurine breeds. And this shows much the same. This here is water intake standardized by the dry matter intake. And you can see there are differences between the taurine cattle and the Bos indicus-based cattle, with the Bos indicus-based cattle having lower water intake. So with GrowSafe systems and Incentex systems, we now have the technology and ability to do some really large, collect these types of phenotypes, water intake phenotypes, on large numbers of animals, where in the past we were more likely to be limited in terms of heritability calculations and understanding the genetic components of that by the size of the and number of phenotypes that we were able to collect. So a couple studies here from the Incentex system. I already showed you the one on the previous slide with a GrowSafe system. These two studies here had dairy cattle, 60 in one and 62 in the other. And you can see there's a really big range in water intake in these studies. So one topped out at 171 kilograms per day, and the other one at 70, almost 79 kilograms per day. So just to kind of introduce you to what we're working on at Oklahoma State, we do have a five-year integrated project that was funded through the USDA. And sort of the idea of the project area was adaptability to abiotic stresses. So we're really trying to look at water availability, water intake, and the impact of water quality and temperature-related stresses on beef cattle. We do have extension and research components, and I'll tell you a little bit about both of those today. So we are using an Incentex system. We have one of these input in the Willard Sparks Beef Research Center, which is where this research is taking place. You may be more familiar with GrowSafe systems, but they operate on essentially the same principle. So you've got all these bunks here on load cells, and the feed goes in. It weighs before the animal comes in, weighs again when the animal comes out. By subtraction, you can figure out the intake. Sort of the different thing about the Incentex system, and this gets back to what some of the previous presenters were talking about in terms of getting used to utilizing those systems. This particular system has a pneumatic gate, which you really can't see here because the gates are down when the animals are eating. But that pneumatic gate goes up and down and regulates their access to those bunks. So for that reason, you can do different rations in different pens, which we're not doing. You can also do feed and water restrictions and things like that with the addition of that gate. But other than that, the systems are very, very similar. So in terms of the study design, we start with a 21-day acclimation to get them used to using that system. And that seems to work pretty well for us. And following that, we do a 70-day test to establish baseline values for feed intake and water intake. So over the next couple of years, we're going to have about 840 animals run through that facility. So we do 120 each time. We've got four pens of 30 animals at any one time. And we can get water intake, feed intake. We collect weight data, of course. We also have a variety of different things that we're collecting, including behavioral data. We collect blood samples to evaluate health status, along with health records. Heat and cold stress measures, so we collect respiration rates on these animals. We also have a subset with rumen temperature boluses, and then we have some behavioral evaluation there as well. We collect rumen and fecal samples, and we have pedometers also on a subset of these animals, so we can evaluate their level of activity. We also have a second testing phase to look at sort of that adaptation part that I mentioned. I'm not going to really talk about that today just due to time constraints, but would certainly welcome anyone coming up and be happy to talk to you about that after the talk. So I'm not going to present very much data because we're in the process of going through and re-standardizing after our second group of animals. But this is a little bit of baseline data for the steers in the first group. So we ended up with 117 out of that 120. Three dropped out of the study, didn't have anything to do with anything we did. They just either got injured or something of that nature. So I just basically broke them down into three groups: low water intake, medium water intake, and high water intake. So we had 39 animals in each of those groups. And I've just got presented here kind of a weight standardized intake values for those animals. So feed intake did have some differences between those groups, particularly in the high group, and that was the high water intake group. But in general, ranged from about 2.2% of their body weight per day up to 2.5%. And for the water intake, there's a little bit more variation, it looks like, in water intake than in feed intake. But started the low group at about 8.5% of their body weight per day, going up to just shy of 12% of their body weight per day in the high group. So here I've just got a basic plot of showing the dry matter intake, again, as a percentage of that animal's average body weight, and the water intake on the y-axis here. To contrast the two, the r-squared there was about 0.2, little north of 0.2. But I think the interesting thing here is that just like in those mouse studies, and like you see in feed intake data compared to gain, you can see there's animals that ate very similar amounts of feed as a percentage of their body weight with some pretty dramatic differences in the amount of water that they're consuming. So on the low end here, we have one that's eating about a couple animals that are eating about 2% of their body weight per day, but their water intake ranged anywhere from 6% of their body weight per day up to almost 14%. And then on the high end here, got one eating, a group of animals eating a little more than 2.5% of their body weight per day, but drinking anywhere between about 8% and 16%. So some pretty dramatic differences there. So of course, we've still got a lot of animals to go. We've got 840 to do, and we only have two groups done. So group three is on test right now. And then we'll finish up those groups in the next couple of years. We're getting ready to send the first batch of samples off for genotyping, so we're going to have those animals genotyped on the GGPHD chip, and so we can take a look at putting together some heritability estimates and doing some genome-wide association analyses with a bunch of these different traits, particularly with the water intake, and take a look at how we might estimate water use efficiency. If you'll recall, I mentioned that we're collecting rumen and fecal samples, so we're going to do some metagenomic sequencing. For that reason, we keep the ration as close to exactly the same as we can between all of those groups. Obviously, we have some differences in hay quality, so we have to make minor adjustments, but for the most part, these guys are getting the exact same ration in each group so that we can go back and kind of pick the tells of those distributions in terms of water intake and try and understand what types of little critters are around in those microbial populations. Because as we know, those microbial populations are really, really important to ruminant animals. We're going to model some greenhouse gas emissions related to this data. If we're lucky, we do have a couple of head boxes at Oklahoma State, and if we're lucky, we may be able to try and identify those that were the most likely to undergo that metagenomic sequencing, and we may be able to collect some actual emissions data on those animals. That wasn't actually part of the proposal, but we're going to try and do that, as well as collect tissue samples on any of them that we can. So I did mention at the beginning that we have some extension outcomes as part of this project, and we're really, really lucky at Oklahoma to have a wonderful group at the Oklahoma Mesonet. And they've got a really, really fantastic network of weather stations across the entire state and really complete and comprehensive environmental data. And they also do a really good job putting together tools for producers. So some of them are things like first hollow stem indicators. Some of them are relative to beef production, like their cattle comfort advisor. So here I've got a picture of the Cattle Comfort Advisor from March and one from June. And basically the Cattle Comfort Advisor for producers in Oklahoma, they can go in and select minimum, average, or maximum for the day. And it has a couple-day forecast capability. So you can go in and take a look at the statewide maps and try and identify heat stress or cold stress issues before they actually crop up so that management interventions can kind of help mitigate those stressors for those animals. So as a part of this project, we're going to partner with Mesonet to expand these nationwide. So by the end of this project, we'll have nationwide maps to the Cattle Comfort Advisor that will be available for anyone in the U.S. We're also fortunate enough to work with them to develop a cattle water demand tool. Using some of the intake data that we're going to get from this project, as well as we're going to try and use some rumen temperature boluses to estimate water intake in pasture-based animals and use that to build this water demand tool. So I would be remiss if I did not recognize the other people on this project, because as you've guessed probably from the mountain of data that we're collecting, it's certainly not me doing it by myself. So this is our project team. Dr. Place may or may not be in here, but you saw her speak the other day. She's on the project, as well as a host of other really excellent collaborators that I'm lucky to work with. And again, I would also be remiss if I didn't recognize the people who are out there taking care of those animals every single day. So I've got pictures of these two ladies here, Christy and Alex. And Christy and Alex do the bulk of the day-to-day work with these animals. They're out there collecting the respiration rates every day and all of that. And I also see Cashley Allberg out there in the audience. She's a relatively new addition to my lab, but I'm lucky to have her, and she's taking a big role on a lot of the lab work in this project, as well as working with some of the phenotypic data that's starting to come out of the project. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions you may have.